Good morning. This is Greg, and I'll be reading the Vermilion County News for Tuesday, August 27th, 2019. And we'll start with the front page of the commercial news. Our first story is entitled Another Firefighter Sworn In, Committee to Act on East Main Agreement. This is by Jennifer Bailey. Danville. Another firefighter was sworn in Monday, and two police promotions will occur today. Probationary firefighter Easton Hoskins was sworn in to fill one remaining vacancy in the Danville Fire Department. Today, Danville Police Sergeant Kyle O'Brien is being promoted to commander, and Police Officer Jason Jeffries is being promoted to sergeant. The Danville Board of Fire and Police Commissioners also on Friday extended the temporary sergeant appointment of Police Officer Nathan Howey. The swearing-in of six probationary police officers, contingent upon passing of physical and psychological examinations, will be on September 11th. Tonight's agenda for the Danville City Council's Public Services Committee includes a development agreement for property on East Main Street west of Burger King. The committee is to consider authorizing the development agreement between the city and Marudi Gagnon Management, LLC. The agreement is for the city to demolish the structures at 829, 831, and 833 East Main Street. The city also will remove the trees and brush. Owner Marudi Gagnon Management will pay for the asbestos removal from the structures and pay all dump fees associated with the demolitions. According to Mayor Ricky Williams, the former residential structures will be removed for potential development. There is not a specific plan as of yet. Also tonight, the committee will continue discussion of city code pertaining to licensing and gaming revenue. In other business, the committee will consider the following items. Confirming approval of a simulcast radio system at 12 sites in Vermilion County and five within the city by Supreme Radio Communications. The project had been on a public safety building bond issue project list with the Danville Public Building Commission, City, and Vermilion County. The cost for the radio conversion to digital project had been amended from $100,000 to $161,316. There was a need to additionally amend the project cost by an additional $279,039 in order to fund the installation of the radio system, according to the resolution. The additionally amended project amount was listed at $324,842. Also, amending city code pertaining to the police department and having a police chief again. Sentences being removed include, there shall be no more than 56 police officers, and an auxiliary police officer shall be a resident of the city. Also, amending the Community Development Block Grant Consolidated Plan for program years 2015 through 2019 to increase the Citizen Participation Plan portion to 50% instead of 10%, or $50,000 of an activity. There would also be public participation meetings in CDBG benefit areas to greater reach the eligible community. The resolution states there was a lack of program efficiency, and there exists a great need for efficiency in order to deliver this program funding to the community. And also amending city code pertaining to public nuisance motor vehicles to reduce the amount of abandoned impounded vehicles with the tow companies and still provide a deterrent for the use of the vehicles in certain offenses. Changes include increasing the grams of cannabis violation to weighing 30 grams or more from 2.5 grams and lowering the $500 penalty to $300. Our next story is entitled Reaching Out to Vets, New Director Ready to Tackle Challenges. This is by Mary Wyckoff. Danville. Sean Bransky, new director of the Veterans Affairs Ileana Healthcare System, believes in the power of optimism. "We have challenges and also have a lot of opportunities," he said. "How do we capitalize on the opportunities?" Quoting former Secretary of State Colin Powell about optimism being contagious, he hopes to instill that attitude in his staff and veterans. Bransky began his job as director at the end of May, having served as deputy director for the Phoenix VA healthcare system in Arizona since April of 2017. Prior to his role in Phoenix, he served at the Alaska VA healthcare system in Anchorage as the associate director since August of 2015. In his new job, Bransky is responsible for overseeing the Ileana system, which includes a 302-bed hospital and a 223-bed community living center, as well as outpatient clinics in Decatur, Mattoon, Peoria, and Springfield. He oversees the delivery of health care to more than 150,000 veterans living in the surrounding 30-county area of Illinois and Indiana, and is responsible for an operating budget of $185,973,699 as of fiscal 19, and a workforce of 1,451. Of that total, 342, or 23.5%, of the employees are veterans. Melissa A. Spady, Health System Specialist and Acting Public Affairs Officer, said Bransky is a great addition to the team at VA Ileana. "He is a veteran himself, and it is very evident with his actions that he demonstrates the mission of the VA every day," she said. "He hit the ground running when he arrived and hasn't stopped." He also frequently meets with our employees and veterans to hear what's on their minds. "From day one, he has stated he has an open-door policy, and I believe our staff and veterans can appreciate that." Bransky served in the Air Force from 1993 to 2014, reaching the rank of Lieutenant Colonel. He was deployed to Korea and Afghanistan. He gets his medical care through Ileana, so he said, "I look at care through the lens of the veterans." "Through the employees and also town halls," he said, "we get feedback from veterans willing to tell you when things are going well and when things are not going well." At a recent town hall sponsored by the American Legion Post 210, veterans shared thoughts on how the VA can improve to meet their needs. "The VA needs to hear where improvements are needed," he said. Ileana staff also is getting ready to do an assessment on identifying the gaps in care today and in the future, and how to meet those needs. One issue that Bransky is passionate about is reaching out to veterans and bringing them into the system. "We want to wrap our arms around them and say, these are the benefits you have earned." We encounter veterans who have never filed a claim. They don't know how to navigate the system, he said. The younger veterans are busy with work and families, but Bransky wants them to get enrolled too. To that end, Ileana is trying to find ways to attract younger vets, such as increasing the use of telemedicine services and discussing whether to extend hours for working vets. "It's important to build the healthcare system around the veterans," he said, "and to offer quality care." Bransky has no plans to make significant changes at the campuses. Instead, he'll oversee projects already in place. For example, ground was broken in July for a 22-bed mental health inpatient building. This state-of-the-art building on the Danville campus will help veterans requiring acute mental health treatment in an inpatient setting. Completion is expected in October of 2020. It's unknown yet what the original 1965 building will be used for. "Mental health is one of our foundational services at our VA, and we are very excited to deliver world-class care in a therapeutic setting," Spady said. Another major project is the addition of two more small homes at the Community Living Center. Ground was broken for those in June, with completion expected next fall. 10 veterans reside in each building, which has a home-like atmosphere. Also, a 20,000-square-foot clinic in Bloomington will open in November, offering primary and mental health. Healthcare is a rapidly changing, dynamic field, Bransky said. In his short time on the job, Bransky said he's impressed with Ileana and is excited about the job. He said, "Our staff is deeply committed to taking care of veterans, from housekeepers to clinicians. It's a team effort. It's about taking care of the veteran." Bransky said the community has been welcoming and he wants to do more outreach. "It's an opportunity to hear from veterans and capture the ones not enrolled," he said. A native of Boston, Bransky grew up in Florida. Bransky received a bachelor's in accounting at Mercer University and a master's in health administration from Chapman University. He is a recipient of several military medals, including the Bronze Star, following his deployment in support of Operation Enduring Freedom. He and his wife, Michelle, have four children. And now we're going to go ahead and turn to the obituaries for Tuesday, August 27th, 2019. And the first is for Richard J. Folletti. Richard Dick J. Folletti, 76, of Tilton, passed away at 3:38 p.m. on August 25, 2019, at OSF Sacred Heart Medical Center in Danville, Illinois. A celebration of life will be at 11 a.m. on Thursday, August 29th, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville. Drew Menser will officiate. Burial will be in Georgetown Cemetery. Visitation will be from 10 to 11 a.m. Thursday at the funeral home. Memorials may be made to the Second Church of Christ. Samuel Rayfield. Samuel D. Rayfield, 77, of Rossville, Illinois, passed away Sunday, August 25, 2019, at Carl Hupston Regional Health Center. A visitation will be from 4 to 8 p.m. on Wednesday, August 28, at Anderson Funeral Home at 427 East Main in Hupston. A celebration of life will be at 11 a.m. Thursday, August 29th, at the funeral home, with Pastor Chris Quick officiating. No burial will be held. The family has requested all memorial donations be directed to the Rossville Fire Department, Rossville United Methodist Church, or to the Sharon Al Massengale Bassett, Karen's sister, Breast Cancer Fund through the OSF Healthcare Foundation. And now we're going to turn to the News Gazette for a story entitled "Coroner IDs Inmate Fatally Shot." Officials say man stabbed a deputy repeatedly in face. And this is by Noel McGee. Danville. The Vermilion County Jail inmate who was fatally shot after attacking and injuring a sheriff's deputy at the courthouse on Friday had a long and violent criminal history. Vermilion County Coroner Jane McFadden on late Monday morning identified the inmate as Darrell L. Perkins, 55, of Hupston. McFadden said an autopsy was performed on Saturday, but details aren't being released because the investigation by Illinois State Police and her office was ongoing. The incident occurred at 10:06 a.m. Friday in the holding cell area of the courthouse at the corner of North Vermilion and Main Streets in downtown Danville. According to Sheriff's Captain Mike Hartshorn, the deputy was moving an inmate between holding cells. When the deputy opened the door of a cell, the inmate attacked him and stabbed him in the face multiple times. Then the deputy discharged his firearm and struck the inmate, Hartshorne said. Both men were taken to OSF Sacred Heart Medical Center in Danville for treatment. The deputy has not been identified. Mr. Perkins was in jail awaiting trial on a long list of charges stemming from a June 25th incident. In July, he was charged and later indicted on one count each of aggravated domestic battery, felony possession, use of a firearm, aggravated unlawful restraint, aggravated battery for great bodily harm, aggravated battery, deadly use of a weapon, and two counts of domestic battery, subsequent offenses. At the time, he had been on parole following his release from the Illinois Department of Corrections for a 2015 residential burglary conviction in Vermilion County. On Friday, Mr. Perkins, who had been ordered to wear a GPS electronic monitor at all times, appeared before Circuit Judge Nancy Fahey at a 9 a.m. hearing to request a new judge. Also in attendance was Assistant Public Defender Aaron Brock, who was representing him, and Special Prosecutor Daniel Weiler of the Illinois Attorney General's Office. Fahey granted the defendant's motion, and his case was sent to Circuit Judge Tom O'Shaughnessy for reassignment. After the hearing, Mr. Perkins was escorted by deputies to the holding cell area located on the first floor and northeast side of the courthouse where the incident occurred. People inside the courthouse say they were asked to stay inside their office and courtroom until the deputy and the inmate were taken outside. Hartshorne said the incident was contained to an isolated area and didn't disrupt court proceedings the rest of the day. Mr. Perkins' criminal history goes back to December of 1999, when he was charged in Vermilion County with two counts of attempted first-degree murder, one count of aggravated discharge of a firearm, two counts of aggravated assault, and one count of aggravated battery with a firearm stemming from a December 20, 1999 incident in which he shot his then-wife. The following December, he pleaded guilty to aggravated discharge of a firearm and was sentenced to 10 years in prison. In 2014, he was sentenced to 3 5-year terms for felony possession, use of a firearm, aiding, abetting, possession, and selling of a stolen vehicle, and possession of methamphetamine under 5 grams, all charges out of Montgomery County. In 2015, he was sentenced to 10 years in prison for the residential burglary for which he was on parole. At the time of his plea, two 2014 criminal cases, one for unlawful restraint, meth possession, possessing drug paraphernalia, and meth precursor, and another for meth possession, were dismissed. In December 2013, a Vermilion County jury convicted Mr. Perkins of domestic violence, but acquitted him of unlawful use of a weapon in a 2011 case. He was ordered to serve 2 years of probation and 180 days in jail, and performed 200 hours of public service work. And on a similar topic, we have an article that appeared in the Commercial News today from the Associated Press entitled "Illinois Prison Deaths Raise Questions About Drug Use Behind Bars." Chester, the deaths of three Illinois prisoners over 3 days from probable intoxication of an unknown substance have raised questions about drug use behind bars and whether inmates are watched closely enough, according to a published report. WBEZ reported Monday that documents the Chicago radio station obtained and interviews it conducted suggest lax supervision before at least one of the deaths that occurred in September of last year at Menard Correctional Center in Chester. The Illinois Department of Corrections defended itself, saying that staffers acted swiftly after the deaths and that its own internal investigation concluded the staffers could not have prevented any of the deaths. But WBEZ said the three cases leave unanswered how the three were able to obtain substances before dying of what the coroner concluded was probable intoxication. In one case, treatment unit administrator Lisa Goldman said her concerns that 31-year-old inmate Kevin Curtis appeared catatonic and severely dehydrated were ignored. And despite being on suicide watch at the time, a guard who was in charge of checking Curtis every 10 minutes told investigators he had not conducted all the checks because he was helping with meals and even admitted he falsified his report log to make it look like he had done the required checks, WBEZ reported. The corrections department noted in its investigation that Goldman was not a medical physician and only provided her professional opinion as a medical health professional. As for the guard, he still works for the department, according to WBEZ. The second man to die, 45-year-old Edwin Freeman, was in the cell next to Curtis and also on suicide watch. The report includes no indication that he was not checked as often as he should have been. In the third death, WBEZ reported that it obtained documents containing prisoner statements, including one from an inmate who said he could hear prisoner Timothy Murray banging on his cell door for help after the morning meal. But according to WBEZ, security staff did not return to Murray's cell until the afternoon meal was distributed. Murray was found unresponsive in his cell just days shy of his 33rd birthday. Department of Corrections spokeswoman Lindsay Hess said all three inmates were provided life-saving measures. She said the department moved quickly to investigate what happened after they died. Autopsies were conducted. The institution was thoroughly searched and air quality tests conducted, Hess said. Their deaths were part of an isolated case, and no further drug-related deaths have occurred at the Illinois Department of Corrections. And we have a story related on the liquor gambling ordinance entitled, Officials Look to Others on How to Handle Liquor Gambling Ordinance. This is by Tracy Crane. Danville. Greg Fileski was able to make a living just selling food and drinks at Dale's Place, but it's been a more comfortable living since the state in 2009 began allowing video gambling terminals at taverns like Fileski's. Gaming has been great for us, said Fileski, who lives in the Seidel area and also owns the Seidel Grocery. Just how great? He said the five terminals in his tavern generate 60 to 70% of his overall business revenue at Dale's. Danville officials have been taking a closer look at the percentage of revenue local businesses are generating from video gambling as aldermen considered ordinance changes that would deny liquor licenses to any businesses that generate more than half of its revenue from video gaming. By state law, a business must have a liquor license to host video gaming terminals. The goal of the changes was to discourage the opening of so-called gambling cafes, where gambling is the major focus, in an effort to protect existing businesses and groups that aren't solely reliant on gambling revenue, but still depend upon it to survive, like American Legion Post 210, VFW, Knights of Columbus, and others, from the ensuing competition. But city officials learned that Dale's Place and other existing businesses with terminals generate more than half of their income from gambling, so they discussed grandfathering them in. One problem with that scenario, that Fileski noted, a liquor license can't transfer to a new owner, so if he sold his business, the grandfather clause would no longer apply to the new owner. That would likely make his business far less attractive to any potential buyers. So, city officials are now studying how other municipalities, including Champaign and Urbana, have written their ordinances pertaining to liquor licenses and gambling venues in hopes of finding the best way to move forward. Mayor Ricky Williams Jr. said the city's staff members have been gathering other cities' ordinances but have yet to find a straightforward solution. Aldermen on the City Council's Public Service Committee will discuss the issue at 6 tonight. We do not desire that we are becoming a gaming cafe community, but how do you do that while protecting existing businesses? Williams said. Filiski said he's pleased that city officials have taken a step back to reassess. Everybody has been great and willing to work with me and other bar owners who had concerns, he said. I think there's a better way to craft it. And now we're going to turn back to the commercial news for the remainder. And I have the following story from Dear Annie. Newlywed finds out about wife's infidelities and her other lies. Dear Annie, I'm a 30-year-old male in my first year of marriage to a charming, beautiful woman, Sunny. I am madly in love with this woman, and she says the same to me. This is a second marriage for both of us. Unfortunately, I'm finding out that she has lied to me about a number of things, and my love for her is being weakened by these revelations. We met shortly after she had broken up with another man. She told me that it was over. However, during our dating prior to marriage, I learned that she was still seeing him and sleeping with him on nights we were not together. At one point, she even suggested that we three should live together, and she would alternate nights with each of us. I wasn't about to accept that. We're married now, but I know she still has at least a phone relationship with him. Her mother has recently moved in with us because I was told that circumstances in her life created that need. I've since learned that those dire straits were untrue. Recently, Sunny has contacted a man she met during her first marriage. She set up a meeting with him. I have no idea what transpired between them, neither initially nor at this time. I do know he has a child named for her. I've just learned that one of her children, supposedly from her first marriage, was fathered by another man during a period of separation in that marriage. On a recent romantic long weekend to a tropical destination, Sunny wanted no part of any sexual romance. Of course, this crushed me. Though I always think of Sunny as an enthusiastic sexual partner, she never initiates intimacy between us. We have been to a marriage counselor, whose concluding comment to me was, "Some beautiful women are like that," meaning they need attention from other men, I think. I'm seriously considering divorce, though I'm still in love with her. I'm feeling used and find myself responding to some situations between us with anger. Can this marriage be saved? Feeling torn. Dear Torn, you are not painting a very sunny picture of Sunny. Unless the two of you had a previous understanding that infidelity was part of the deal, her actions would leave anyone feeling used. Your therapist's observation that some beautiful women are just this way seems dismissive and flippant. You might consider seeing another therapist. Unless you are okay with Sunny's infidelity, this marriage will only bring you darkness and hurt. It's time to find a new therapist who helps you better understand what you would like out of a marriage. And then you need to tell Sunny in no uncertain terms what that is, perhaps being faithful. And what's with her mother? Is she enabling or encouraging Sunny to split the two of you apart? When I read your letter, I couldn't help but wonder why you married her if you knew she was cheating on you when you were dating. With good therapy, you can both decide if you want to stay together and make it work or go your separate ways. Best of luck to you. And finally, we have this from the community briefs about street work starting. Work begins today on Michigan Avenue and Seminary Street. The contractor will be milling and patching on Michigan. Once the patching on Michigan is complete, they will start patching Seminary between Section and Collett Streets. This work will take several days to complete, and motorists should expect delays and plan alternative routes while the work takes place. For information, contact Eric Childers, Assistant City Engineer, at 217-431-2259. And that's about all the time we have for today, Tuesday, August 27th, 2019. My name is Greg, and this has been the Vermilion County News. It's been a pleasure to read for you, and I hope you have a great day. Take care.